Hey, it's your old pal Slim, and this is 70 Millimeter, finally a podcast about movies. Each week, I'm joined by famous artist Danny Haas.
Everyone's seen it. Calm down.
And writer, poet, Protalexis.
My bathrobe is always open to new movies, fresh ideas, musicals, men with hyphens in their names.
And together, we discuss recently watched movies. Later in this episode, we're focusing on Lynn Ramsey's Rat Catcher. Set during Glasgow's national garbage strike in the 70s, Rat Catcher explores the experiences of adolescent youth surrounded by guilt and poverty. Enjoy! In our DMs this week, private DMs, you know, we talked during the day on Slack. We came up with, I don't know who it was, you know, it's a joint effort between Danny and I. We came up with this idea for an episode format that sounded genius to us, but there was one host that poo-pooed it. Maybe we'll just throw it out here, see what people think. Maybe we'll do an IG poll, you know. 70 millimeter drive-in episodes where we record us talking while we watch a movie. You know, give our commentary while we watch a full movie. I'm not sure if anyone's ever done this before. Like put on a movie and then like record commentary while you're watching. It's shocking to me that it hasn't been done yet. But I don't know. Thought it was a cool idea, but it didn't go over so hot in chat today.
I'm excited about us being the first to pull it off, you know? Pick a good movie, one that everyone can watch with us, not one that we have to order through Amazon and hope that it arrives on time.
Like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Let's just say we put out a bonus ep, 70 millimeter drive-in episode, Raiders of the Lost Ark. You're at home, you fire up Netflix and hit play on that podcast. We're all together talking, watching this movie together.
I need to know that this is what people want, okay? You can have a lot of ideas, a lot of plans, but if the villagers don't even want this, what's the point? Okay. That's why we need to get some feedback on this.
Yeah.
Because we could go hog wild and do one of these commentary, but if no one listens, did we even do it?
Is that why we do this, for people to listen? Proto, it's not about the friendship that we've been emboldened by over these 20 odd episodes. You know, is that all that matters to you? The listens?
I mean, that's the marketing pitch, the friendship.
All right. Well, let's leave it to the villagers. If you think this is an okay idea, let us know. Maybe we'll do an IG poll. We'll get the feedback to see if people would listen to this, if they want us to do it. Maybe Proto's right. Maybe this is the worst idea in history. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why no one's done it before. And we'll find out in the numbers once they hit. Next week, let's get into some positive news. Next week is the big 25th episode extravaganza between double feature. You talk about driving. This is a double feature drive-in and a half. Armageddon and Deep Impact. We're going to be talking about both movies simultaneously. Never happened before. Which is better? We'll put out a poll. I already know what the answer is going to be, but I love an underdog. And we'll see which is the better movie on this show. So get your voicemails ready. Get your fingers ready to start tapping away on a letter. When was the last time you openly wept at a Bruce Willis movie?
God, Die Hard Again? Is that what it's called?
Live Free or Die Hard.
How bad that movie was.
Oh my God. Why would you see that movie? Or maybe you didn't. I'm just getting my chain yanked.
No, I saw that.
Jenna,
I think I saw that Christmas
stop
morning.
Forcing him to watch these Die Hard movies.
I think my dad probably got that for himself for Christmas and then put it on. Gifts are unwrapped 11 a.m. He said, hey, let's go downstairs. Let's put on one of these movies. You know, I'm thinking it's going to be Nacho Libre. Instead, we're watching Bruce Willis fly a helicopter through a hotel or whatever he did in that movie.
Nacho Libre Christmas
Die
Day.
Die Hard
is
with
the
a
best.
Vengeance. No one talks about that movie anymore, but that was the hottest S for like a good decade, if I remember correctly. Samuel Jackson. Mm. Remember that? That scene with like the water containers and the bomb?
No.
You never seen Die Hard with a Vengeance?
I don't think I ever saw that.
Not.
Sorry. I think my heart just stopped for a second. I can't believe what I'm hearing
Everyone's
right now.
Seen it. Calm down.
Golly.
Just can't remember crappy movies.
Oh, what?
Sorry.
We got to put this on as a hot drop.
Vengeance.
That's another question I wouldn't.
Oh.
A Die Hard. Yeah, hot drop with a vengeance.
Hot drop with
it's
a vengeance.
It's another thing I wouldn't mind hearing from the villagers. We got to get a survey going. See if maybe people want to hear about the hot drops before they happen. Get prepped.
No one's ever done surveys before.
Has anyone around here done a survey about a podcast before? I don't think so.
I mean, the last time villagers gave movie options, we got Ratcatcher.
Danny's setting the stage. Wow. Bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking about Ratcatcher. That was Proto's pick after getting almost 70 responses, suggestions. It was around the 60 range. Lynn Ramsey's Ratcatcher is our feature presentation this week. We'll be getting to it shortly. But Danny is not holding back right now. And we haven't even gotten to the discussion yet. Not holding back. Look at that grin. Mischievous.
Sorry.
Grin.
Speaking of surveys and doing polls on IG, Danny, the floor is yours.
What are you talking about?
Go ahead.
What do you guys got cooked up over here? Something's brewing.
No, we should just get into what we watched this week. You know, it's on my list anyway.
Mm.
You know.
Okay, we can get into what we watched this week. What did you watch this week, Danny?
Let's see. It doesn't matter. Brother Bear, Ronin, Back to the Future, Don Jap. But what we need to talk about is Hamilton.
Oh, God.
And it coming to Disney Plus.
Big
rocking event. The world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
We've been big fans of it in this household over here. I want to share this experience with you, Matt. And you as well, Proto. I don't know how else to pitch this without... It's the things have been said already, you know? Mm. Everyone's gushed over this for so long.
Life changing.
You guys, Matt walks the streets of New York, probably pass Richard Rogers theaters so many times. It ignored Hamilton.
Passed Lynn on the street.
All he had to do was take out a second mortgage to go see it, but he refused.
Right. But now his $6.99 a month gets him Hamilton. Front row seat, original cast. All of
this
them.
This has been lighting up my social media feeds. I've been keeping my mouth quiet.
Do you know, put a poll up and let the villagers choose for you, or do you have to just willingly go into this for us?
Can you imagine if we put a poll up that said, choose between these two movies, Hamilton or Batman Returns, one of which is not going to be covered ever in the history of the show, and they had to choose.
Oh my gosh. I'd have to pay for some ads. Swing the vote on this one.
You'd be going to subreddits. You'd be going to message boards. Proto, where do you stand on this? You've been conspicuously silent during this proposal.
Listen, my bathrobe is always open to new movies, fresh ideas, musicals, men with hyphens in their names. I'm willing, you know. Also, I feel like I'm eventually going to see it anyway. As soon as my wife catches wind to, it being on there and that we could watch it, I'll probably watch it anyway. So, you know, it's a cultural moment in our history. It's probably the biggest thing going on right now in the world. Hamilton, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything else going on?
It's debatable.
Yeah.
I won't get into that.
All I know is easier relevant. To get Matt to watch Cats. Than it is to get him to watch Hamilton.
I can't believe I watched Cats. I fell into that once, that trap somehow. Listen, I haven't even revealed this over our private DMs, but I'm about to tell you something.
Did you watch it?
My dear lovely wife asked me yesterday, you heard about this Hamilton? Should we watch Hamilton?
Excuse me?
And I almost dropped a bowl of Lucky Charms onto the floor. you know, I had like that PTSD moment where the background goes red behind me. And I told her, I don't know, these 70 millimeter boys are cooking something up for this recording night. So we'll see what they say.
We didn't even talk about it. We didn't plan anything. We're just gonna let this work happen naturally with you, Matt. We don't wanna slimfluence you, you know?
But I've already been slimfluenced. That's why I haven't given two rats rear ends about this play. Mm-hmm.
If we did a poll though, what kind of percentage in the positive?
It would have to be in the high 90s.
Would it be
90 percentile?
Same as the Senate to pass a bill. 90% and above.
The House of Villagers needs to get 90% rating. If we get 90% on a poll asking if we should do Hamilton, I love the idea of pitting it against Batman Returns, but that feels somewhat cruel. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably pull back on that idea. If we get 90% of people saying we should do Hamilton, then I will listen to the Villagers.
What if you just agree to it now? And then we let you pick whatever movie you want.
I don't like that plan.
Hmm.
No, you don't think you can get 90%
of Villagers? I know we can get 100%.
What are you worried about?
I just want you to agree to this, Matt, and just...
I'll agree to it if we get 90%.
Okay. Let's do it. We'll put a poll up Monday afternoon.
I'm going to be searching Hamilton ads. Don't you worry about that in incognito mode on a Finsta just to see what shows up.
Listen...
No ads allowed.
One post.
I'm going to ask Casey to pull the numbers. Show me the receipts.
Don't make her look at my transactions, please.
Mama mia. Okay, so that's done. I do want to mention our Letterboxd Pro winner of the week this week. We use Letterboxd. I've been using it a ton. I watched a ton of movies over the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Feels real good. It's our favorite social media site, social network for film lovers, not film buffs. If you're a film buff, you can use it too, but we always say we're not film buffs, we're film lovers. Lets you log your movies as like a diary, give reviews, ratings for all your friends. It's free to use, but if you're a pro member, you get extra features. You can see where movies are streaming. You can sort entire lists of movies by where they're streaming. Super helpful. So this week's winner for a free year of Letterboxd Pro is Candace Dunlap. Mm. Candace. You did it.
Congrats, Candace.
Congratulations.
CD.
Part, did you watch anything over our brief holiday break that you want to discuss?
I did. I watched a few movies. There's a few I would like to discuss. Where to start? So I watched, the ones I'd be interested in talking about. Bombshell, Altered States, They Shall Not Grow Old, and One from Our Girl. Cher, The Witches of Eastwick.
As Cher month rolls on.
Yeah.
Continues on into the summer months.
Yeah, Cher month, she's in the purgatory of the committee. Can't get it out of there. Just grinding away. They're in the back room. Won't let her out.
What did you think of Witches of Eastwick? I think I recall you giving that a high rating.
I gave that 4 stars. It's a hoot. It's so much fun. Jack Nicholson is, he's the devil, and it's sick, some of the things he does and says, but it's hilarious as well. Then you got Cher, you got Michelle Pfeiffer, and you got Susan Sarandon, who has, if I can say, some of the most outrageous hair I've ever seen in a movie. fantastic. She must have had like 3 blowouts. To get that hair looking the way it did. But yeah, I loved it. It was great. It's by my boy George Miller of Mad Max fame. And you can kind of tell in some of the scenes it has that feel of the way he shoots some stuff. So I definitely recommend it. It's very different. It's actually also based on a novel. I didn't know this, by John Updike. From my readers out there, I recommend it if you're looking to get into Cher month, if it's official or unofficial. You know, let's just do it on our own, villagers.
Right. There's no rules.
There's no rules.
Anything goes. What else? Anything else on your list that stood out?
Well, I think the documentary I watched, They Shall Not Grow Old, it was by Peter Jackson. It's it's footage from the First World War, and they recolored a lot of it. I think it's worth watching because very rarely you see footage from that war. And it was just like a really cool insight into that moment in history. So I highly recommend that. And then the other one is Altered States, which I liked it. but it's very, I thought it was really strange. I haven't seen much of William Hurt, but I was very kind of confused by him in this. I was thinking like, does he not know how to act? Because as I was watching it, it was reminding me of every other movie I've seen him in where I think he just plays the same person. Like the only other thing I really remember him in is The Village. And I was like, he's like the same person like 20 years later in this movie. And I was kind of put off by his whole performance. I love the idea. The concept is fantastic, but it just didn't come together for me in the end.
When I saw you post that review on our Slack, I was crestfallen I saw that rating.
I know.
I don't even think Chuck commented on it.
He did not.
Dear friend, yeah. Chuck Forsman.
He refused. From Bat and
Spider.
He just put
he
up
did
a
not
poster.
Want to acknowledge it. I love Altered States. That movie is an experience and a half, in my opinion. The music, the noise, cinematography, William Hurt's weirdness. Love it.
One thing I don't like is, so I know, I think you mentioned in your review, there's a scene where there's like a caveman performance, so to speak. I don't like anything in a movie where a man, like a person kind of acts like an animal. What's that movie with the Bigfoot?
Harry and the Hendersons?
Yeah, I loathe that movie more than like anything in my life. I hate the whole idea of that movie. It makes me sick, just like the mental image of that character. So anything like that, it just puts me off.
What an odd thing to say.
Oh, man, that's good.
Good Lord. I watched a lot of movies. I was actually just looking at my Letterboxd diary. I think I watched like 20 movies since we last recorded. I watched Dr. Sleep, the sequel to The Shining, which I enjoyed. Gave it a similar rating. But then I went on a Hitchcock spell, still on it.
Mm-hmm.
Watched a ton of Hitchcock. Probably the highest rated one was Dial M for Murder. Gave it 5 stars. It's unreal. Quentin Tarantino was probably, you know, a young man watching that movie. And I think it influenced his films to this day. Not about derogatory words or women's feet, but mainly about long scenes where people talk. But I also watched, I just watched To Live and Die in L.A.
Nice.
William Friedkin's was on a Friedkin kick for a bit and gave that 4.5 stars. The movie's amazing. It's like a Grand Theft Auto game come to life, 1985. It felt like the exact inspiration for Grand Theft Auto as we know it today.
Interesting.
So track it down if you can. Also, you get to see William Peterson's hog in that movie in a love scene.
Excuse me?
So if you're not ready for some Willem Dafoe nudity and William Peterson hog, don't watch that movie. Okay. That's all I got to say.
Excuse?
It's funny that you should say that. I was, before we started recording, I was talking to my wife and I was saying how hog is one of my favorite words. It's just fantastic. I mean, not in this context. I'm not thinking in this time, but just in general, like hog, you know, it has so many.
I mean, I agree with you. It's a great word. It has many uses. I mean, that thing is flopping around in that scene. It's a very sexual scene. He goes to have relations with a woman who's an informant and she undresses like in front of him and he's behind her. So you can't really see him, but you know that he's nude. And then she like jumps on him and they like lay on the bed. So it was very risque for in terms of filming wise. They must have really trusted each other. But man, that thing is just like, you know, I'm doing a little motion on the camera, which can't really be described, but.
To live in hog in LA.
enough tomfoolery. We need to get into our feature presentation. Ratcatcher Lynn Ramsey's 1999 film, her debut, wrote and directed it. This was Melissa Mendez's pick for Protalexis. Thank you, Mel. And maybe we can link to her Letterboxd in the show notes here and the chapters. But Proto, can you walk us through this movie?
Ratcatcher is a child amongst the trash. James lives in 1970s Glasgow, where the living conditions are poor and the world around him dangerous. Trash piles up against every wall outside, rats pervade every corner, and the creek behind the complex can swallow you whole. Despite the dangers, James relentlessly explores the world around him, mingling with a gang of predators and finding tenderness in the hunted. James is endlessly looking for something, curious of the world around him and the world that lies outside its walls.
I think I slowly started to get really big reminders of All or Nothing that we watched with Chuck, Melissa's partner.
Yes.
Like almost like you could say this is the All or Nothing cinematic universe. To the point where I didn't know which boy was on the cover of the movie. So when those boys started playing by the water, I started getting really anxious. And I was like, oh God, what's this movie about? What is going to happen in this movie to this boy, one of these boys? And because I didn't really look into the plot of the movie, much like our producer, Dale underscore A, doesn't even watch trailers. So right at the onset, I was like nervous about what depths of emotional trauma this movie might incorporate. But I don't know. What did you guys know or feel going into starting this movie?
I was actually, the first scene with the kid and the curtains kind of set the tone for me. It was a weird, like I knew he was playing, but visually it gave the, it made me feel like he was strangling or suffocating. And it just kind of was like this picture of how they're living as well. Like they're trying to play inside of this mess that they're living in. So it's like they're doing their best, but they're suffocating as well. And then it goes into the kids playing and the one kid drowning scene. And I was unsettled from the beginning, right away. Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And it seemed obvious, I guess, after I looked at the cover again, it was like, oh yeah, I guess that would be like a dead child. And the boy we first see, which I think his name is Ryan, but yeah, at first I didn't put that together. And when the way it plays out in the movie, I wasn't sure like that's what happened. Like it's not very clear at first. Like, you know, he's in the water. And it just seemed kind of odd that he would even drown there in that spot. But I guess later James goes back and he gets stuck in the mud, like when he's like reaching down into there. So I guess the sense is that like he got, the other boy got stuck in there and couldn't get out. But yeah, I was pretty surprised that that's what happened at the start.
Even later in the movie where the kids play near the water again, mm-hmm. Man, I would board up that canal. Get those kids away from that canal. It doesn't look deep. Later in the movie, you see that it's just like a big drop, I guess, like 2 feet into it.
Yeah.
But man, what are those kids doing near that canal? I will slap the S out of any child playing near that canal to avoid any of this in the future. So help me God. I was furious.
I mean, it happens again too. I mean, the dad has to save another boy drowning or whatever in the water. So it's like a random occurrence.
The dad is from Force Awakens, right?
What?
Did he play one of the gang members? I feel like I've seen this guy before.
I've seen this guy before, for sure. I don't know about Star Wars, maybe.
We might need to check that out. Because remember the gang that comes to get Han Solo's money or whatever?
No. The Conjure Club or the other one?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
It was a different guy with a face scar.
He does have a very thick accent, though, but it's not the same guy. This guy's old now.
Oh, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He's Tulloch? I don't even know who that is.
Oh, I love Tulloch and I love that movie. So yeah, you're right. I don't know how I didn't remember.
I'm recognizing him from something else too.
Go deeper. Go deeper.
Dig. Jump in the canal.
Deeper. I'm take a screenshot of Broder right now with the glasses all lit up. He's like the alien from Independence Day on the computer in the ship.
God. Wait, what is this picture? There's a picture of him here. Oh, he was in Gladiator.
Oh, even better.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Back-to-back bangers.
Mm. I can't tell if Danny's being sarcastic about Guardians because that's a Marvel movie or not. If he's pulling our chain.
I would never.
Can never tell.
I can't tell. My Trolldar is like wonky. It's like a compass spinning around right
Finally,
now.
You can't see through my fog.
So right off the bat, it almost reminds me of another movie that I won't talk about, a horror movie recently that came out where there's like an accidental death and the boy's reaction is to just kind of like run away and mm-hmm. pretend it almost didn't happen. And then someone else finds the body. And right off the bat, I wrote like, this boy needs therapy ASAP. And obviously there's no opportunity for therapy because these people are living in poverty, like squalor. There's no exit. There's no help for anyone living in this town. And that is just a thread that continues over the course of this movie, especially with this boy just interacting with his dad, who I think is his dad, right? Who's an alcoholic.
Duh.
And, you know, you're just generally unsettled because, I mean, this is a realistic portrayal of life in that time frame and elsewhere that still continues to this day, but him sitting next to his dad who tells him to go get a beer and he drinks some of the beer and then the sister like comes in and complains and says like, I'm going to tell him you drank some of that beer. There's so many of those moments in the movie that are so realistic and uncomfortable that they're kind of hard to describe. And the movie is really built around those moments about how this young boy just lives through all that constantly. And lives with the knowledge that he was the cause of this boy's death. Ugh.
Yeah, he, with the beer too, he also spits in it.
Ugh.
You know, I really, like what you're saying is true. Like this kid would need help. This situation is terrible. But I really struggled with having sympathy for him. He was just kind of like the kid I want to smack. Mm. Like everything. He was just like mischievous and kind of mean. For no reason other than to be mean. But I guess that's the point. Like all the kids in here are like that, where they're very almost like hostile by default to everyone else around them. Like, because then there's a gang of teenagers that he runs into eventually who are just really on the prowl to cause trouble and mayhem in whatever way with whoever they find in whatever they come across. Mm-hmm. So it's almost, I guess, like a glimpse of his future in this environment as well, that, this is just where they are. But as I'm watching it, you know, I want to feel sympathy for him, but he just kept being such like a rascal that I don't know. I had trouble connecting with him.
What about the idea that like the environment itself and his upbringing was the cause of that, you know, that he was that way, you know, like, can you imagine?
He's
like 14 and he's probably had like zero output of love from his father. And I guess you could say it's like a deep dive on like what causes a bully. Yeah, I don't know if he was a bully per se, but he obviously was kind of just like a jerk off. You know, it's,
I mean, he did point. Just drown a kid.
I mean, even that's the way that scene starts where he starts throwing, he pushes that kid in the water. I would slap the S out of that kid if I was his father. Even if I wasn't his father, get the F away from my son. Push him to the ground in that mud.
Right.
God dang. I think that's an interesting cinematic choice to have the movie surround this kid who is in those positions and is that way the way he is because of his surroundings. And you're kind of forced to follow him around and see what happens as a result of that. How about the girl in town? Margaret Ann, I think was her name. Mm-hmm. The girl with her glasses, like she gets bullied by those boys that throw glasses in the canal. And she hangs out with James and she asks him if he sees the glasses in there. Like, can you help me? She's like, asking for help. He can see them, but he tells her no.
Yeah.
Which you can say is, you know, his probably from his trauma of the area, or maybe he's also just being rapscallion-ish to not try to help her. But there's a scene that follows up there and they kind of explain that she's, I don't know how to put this, but she's like like in a lack of phrasing of the town tramp, because she's like one of the only girls there. And these bullies just kind of like have their way with her. I don't know if she allows it, but it's just part of her life where she hangs out with these boys and they like take turns laying on her and stuff. It's very uncomfortable, but she offers her hand to James in that moment where she's sitting on the, on this canal area, and she has a bloody scab on her knee. James's hand goes on her, like on her thigh, but the whole time he's looking at like that blood. Mm. That was an insane scene. Just warping James's, like I just felt in that moment that James's mind is being so warped about what love is and what emotion is and what happiness is, that that scene was just so powerful to me on just how messed up his interpretation of life is in that moment. Mm. I don't know about you guys.
And she says, "Do you want to touch it?" when he's looking at the scab.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting thing to say. But she recognizes his gaze on it.
Ugh.
Yeah, that scab, that was like a really uncomfortable scene just to even look at that. That, because it wasn't just like a scab. It was like torn flesh, like open and looking like it was like ready to bleed, like a flap of skin. And it was just focused on it for a long time. And it was hard to look at. I was starting to get squeamish at that scene.
The mother of the boy that drowned eventually does leave town. This was kind of lost on me, but the way they're living in these, you know, really crappy housing conditions. There's no toilets. They have to use these like joint areas. There's no showers. But this is based on a real situation in the 70s where eventually they were moving these families out of these areas into nicer housing. And the mother of the dead child does get moved out, and she moves away. And she gives the shoes that were meant for her son to James to put on. So he's walking around town with like the shoes of the kid that he's responsible for killing. God, I couldn't even deal with it. I was like, this poor kid, my God. Also, they were the most heinous shoes in history.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing that happens with his dad too, when his dad brings back, I think, the soccer cleats. Mm-hmm. And the scene where his dad's watching soccer and he wants his son to come watch it with him, and it's kind of forced, not forcing, but I can understand like the father wanting the son to be this macho sports person, but I think he saw something in his dad that he didn't want to be. And I think the comparison of the shoes was interesting because it was like these sports cleats that he didn't want to wear them, but he wore the shoes of the dead kid, which was a lot like really feminine shoes. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there was some sort of metaphor there, but I've only watched it once, but I noticed it with the shoes because they show shoes a couple times.
I can see him not wanting to be in any way similar to his own father at that point of the movie, for sure.
Yeah, he was so gross.
Yeah, I thought the scene where he goes up to get the shoes was interesting because the mother of the boy who died at the beginning, she tells him to go up, you know, go up to the place, there's a pair of shoes and you can have them, but still he really sneaks up there. He finds them. And as soon as he gets them, he like snatches them and runs away with them. Mm. Almost as if he's never been in a situation where someone's giving him something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even know how to deal with it. Like, he thought he had to act like he was stealing it. Mm. Or that was like his only reference point for something like this. Mm-hmm. I thought that was eye-opening about just his worldview. And I guess, like, now that we're talking about it, and even like what you said, Danny, about the shoes, there is like a lot you could glean about just his, yeah, like how he views the world and his experience in it through all these different scenes.
Yeah, definitely.
Eventually he gets on a bus and kind of leaves town, and he kind of goes to the end of the line and comes upon this like really nice field where there's a brand new house that has been built. He goes in there, walks around. He just spends time by himself in this house, sits in a bathtub, you know, just enjoys a potential life that he doesn't have almost. And there is probably the shot of the movie where he looks out that window and sees this kind of just untouched field through the window of this house. And the next shot is him just kind of running through the field, just living his life, having fun in the field, just, you know, like untouched of any kind of negativity. What an amazing shot that was. And just a scene of him kind of finally having a moment to himself that he hasn't really had ever, of pureness almost. Really stunning stuff, I thought, from Lynn Ramsey for her first movie.
And I think that's my favorite scene of the movie too. And it's also when the, there's, because the score in this movie is actually quite perfect and in like its sparseness, but when it's there, it's really well done. But when he's riding that bus out there and the score kicks in, it almost feels like a different movie a little bit. It's very uplifting. It's very dreamlike, especially when he's visually seeing that field, and it almost feels not real in comparison to what we were at before him getting out there, how dark and how gross and devastating that where he lives, and then getting to the potential of where his family can get moved to. It was a weird, it was a great moment in the film. I think it was like taking a breath because you're in so much darkness. And then it kind of, it's about halfway through the film when this happens, and you kind of have like take a breather from everything. It is my favorite part of the movie for sure. Mm-hmm. I love that framed shot out that window. It's beautiful.
I think we know what's going to be the episode artwork at this point.
It's also such a stark contrast to everything that was previous to this, of just the housing development and where they live now. And then you go to this area, and even the fact that he gets his sister, his older sister gets on the bus. She doesn't tell him where he's going, but she gets on the bus and leaves. And that gives him the idea that he's going to do the same thing. And he gets on the bus, and the bus driver asks him like, where are you going? And he just doesn't say anything because he doesn't even know. He just wants to go somewhere. And he gets on the bus, and then he just rides the bus to the end of the line. Mm. And it just drops him off here. And he doesn't have any idea of where he is, but he actually ends up where his family is going to be moved to at the end of the movie. And, you know, when he's there, I, you know, they don't give you a sense in the movie if he knows that this is the development of the place that he would be moved to. But what an amazing revelation that would be at the end, where, you know, like we're driving to our new house, and they're literally driving to the place where he went to escape the world that he was in.
How gorgeous was that bus too?
Danny's somehow going to weasel that bus in the artwork. Plan B artwork, rejected artwork, the bus. Yeah, so I'm glossing over a bunch. So if there are any other scenes that we want to talk about as well, by all means. But later on, the father ends up rescuing someone from the canal. He hears that another boy is like drowning in the canal, and he goes out and fishes the boy out and is hailed as like a town hero. And he's given kind of like an award and stuff. And his family, the father's kids, are just like worshiping him. Mm. And just another scenario where James is looking on from afar at two things. Like, he wasn't a hero. He was the cause of someone's death. And his father is the opposite. But also his father is like an a-hole that never has given him anything. And his family now views him, the father, as like a perfect individual. And it just felt so bad for him to be in that a new situation where he was pushed aside and his father is now just like viewed as like such a good guy.
Yeah, I think one of the most powerful moments with James and his dad is when they're at the award ceremony. And I think, I don't know if they announce the names, but he's going up and he like kisses his daughters and he kisses his wife. And then he just looks at James, like he stares at him and he doesn't smile or give any reaction. And they just like stare at each other for a moment. And then he walks up. And man, really their relationship in this movie, there's so many moments like that where you just think, God, not good. Not a good look, man.
No. Yeah.
Really rough stuff.
I think soon after this is when we kind of didn't talk about this other boy that he befriends, the like rat boy, the mouse boy or whatever. Mm-hmm. The one who like puts
the actual rat catcher.
He puts the rat like attached to a balloon and sends him up into space. And there's a few scenes involving this character where the bullies interject and it's just really uncomfortable. I don't even know how to like describe them. Just like, I wanted out of those scenes so bad just because I just cannot imagine being in those scenes. But soon after an interaction with this boy, the boy actually says like, I saw what you did. I know that you were there in the canal with the other boy. And so James, like, soon after this, he goes to sleep on the couch with his sister. And it's really like quiet scene where he's just like laying there thinking. And then the next scene, the next morning, he goes out to that canal and sits on the edge of the canal and just jumps right in and does not come back up. And, you know, you're kind of led to believe that he just kind of had it, that his life sucked, and that, you know, this maybe eventually just get out, that I was the cause and nothing's going to change here. And the very next scene is his family walking through those fields that he saw outside of that house. They're moving into that house that Broda mentioned that he hung out in that one day. And the first scene there, James isn't with them, but another scene, he appears like looking at them entering the house and he like smiles, and then the movie, and then the movie ends. Holy moly. What an ending. Unbelievable. I was like so angry, but I think that's the point. You're not, it's not like overtly like he's dead, or it's kind of left open. You know, he appeared there at the end. Was he really smiling? Was he really there? Did he eventually get saved? I don't think so. I think he did kill himself in that canal. And his, God, the grin on his dad's face entering that house, presumably after his son has died, just left me in a very emotionally distraught situation at the end of that movie.
There was surreal aspects to it because of the way they're traveling there. They're going over the crest of this field that looks like it's filled with, you know, looks like wheat, you know, it's like really tall golden grass. And they're carrying like one piece of furniture and you're like, where are they even coming from? Like, this doesn't feel like it makes any sense. So there's like, it's a very strange scene, especially how it comes right after him sinking to the bottom of the canal.
It could just be metaphorical in that he's viewing as he killed himself. Now his family's better off without him, you know, and that was like his metaphorical view of life after he's gone. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I definitely felt like the ending was dreamlike. I actually almost feel like a lot of that him going there was also more dreamlike as well. I don't know if he actually went there. The more I thought about it, maybe he did. And maybe that's why he knows what to dream of at the end, or what, you know, what he's visioning his family after his death. But it's interesting to think about. I really don't think the ending is what happened in real life. I do think it's his dream.
Do you think he killed himself?
I want to say yes. That's where I was at when I finished. I thought he killed himself. But leaving it open, I want to say no, just because I don't want to think of a kid drowning himself in a canal. Mm-hmm. It's heavy. I mean, this movie is very heavy. We did skip over a scene where he has a really intimate moment with the girl. I can't think of her name. Is it Margaret?
Margaret Ann, I think.
Mm-hmm. With them, and because she's known around town as the, like, the whatever, the tramp girl. But they take that bath together where they're washing the lice out of their hair. And it's interesting because he doesn't treat her like the other boys do. And they kind of had like a brother sister moment with each other. And she asks if she loves him. And when they spend the night together, I did like that scene, even though I could have done without a little bit of the nudity. But, I like that. I like that moment with them, the two of them eating the sandwiches like an old married couple.
Yeah. Part of any other scenes that we might have missed?
Still that ridiculous moon scene. The rat in space.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot about that.
That took me out of it, and not in like a funny way. I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was very playful though too. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It's also very strange. Like back to that boy with the rats. Or, you know, they have this game outside. He brings out his, I think it's a mouse, but yeah, it might be
that,
whatever
it is. Not a rat.
The
white mouse. He brings it out and like the teenager bullies want to play with it. So he like takes it out and gives it to James, but then they start tossing it around and you're thinking like, someone's just going to throw this mouse against the wall and it's going to be over. But amazingly, it doesn't happen. Yeah. He gets it back. He puts it back in the cage. And he goes upstairs and you're thinking, okay, that's cool. But then he ties the mouse to a balloon and lets it go out the window. You know, he calls to the kids down at the street, And they all are kind of like, what are you doing? They seem like all kind of shocked that this boy who loves this mouse all of a sudden is letting it go to die. Presumably, you know, of course it's going to die. Like, what, you know, what's going to happen to it? But it goes into this very dreamlike, playful scene where it flies off onto the moon, which is full of other mice, and they're living on the moon. And then it kind of pulls out and you see it on the television screen. Mm-hmm. So the score also works really well there. And like mm-hmm. Danny said, I think that main piece of music that's used throughout this, it works so well. It is perfect in those scenes and how it's used.
So overall for me, I think this is probably a 4-star movie on Letterboxd. It still just blows my mind that this is like Lynn Ramsey's first movie. She mm-hmm. wrote and directed it. You Were Never Really Here, as I talked about on this podcast before, is one of my favorite movie experiences for sure. I'm glad part of you picked it. I'm like annoyed that there's not an easy way for people to track this movie down. Like, it's only available on DVD. We had to get the DVD on Amazon. This should be on like the Criterion app, for God's sake. It's a Criterion movie. Like mm-hmm. whatever rights need to be tied up. Like, this should be something that's probably in like some kind of film schools or something. Because I think it's an amazing first film.
I really wanted to like this movie more, but I feel like I had we mentioned All or Nothing, but in the ways that I had All or Nothing vibes and that didn't really work with me. I feel like I had the same problems with this movie where I think I was like halfway through and I just really wasn't hooked. I just didn't really care that much about what was happening. Like we said, like there's scenes that are great. And I think the more I think about the movie, the more I like it. I think if I watched it again and thought about it more, I would like it more. But I think the lack of like a concrete story and the sense of like treading water in this environment, for me, like those movies just don't resonate as well. Hmm. And that's just like the way I am with stories and movies. So this is a 3-star movie for me.
Okay. 3 stars. Fine. 3 stars is good.
It's good.
We have a t-shirt that says that in our Cotton Bureau store that you can find a link to in the show notes.
I know I made my rat catcher jabs, but I did enjoy this movie. I think after first viewing, I was probably sitting where you are, Proto, at a 3-star. Maybe it was the language, not the language, but the accents and the thickness and the following of this movie. I think something didn't connect with me either. And at the beginning, I was 3 stars. But as I dug into it a little bit more, a couple of things that I can appreciate is Lynn's eye. This movie is absolutely stunning, even in the gross scenes. It's captured really quite perfectly. This film feels like a piece of like working art, and I can appreciate that a little bit more. The children's the William Edey, who was James, was absolutely incredible in the way that she can direct a child that he felt like a seasoned actor, and he was what, 9 years old, I guess, or something. So the more I thought about this movie, the more I read a little bit more about it, and jumped back into the cinematographer. I forget his name. Some of the shots in this film are absolutely perfect. So I'm gonna sit at a 4-star for this movie. I don't think it can go higher, even after multiple rewatches, because I don't know if I'll connect more with the story. But visually, I really thought this was a beautiful movie, and I love the score a lot too. So I am happy you picked it, even though I made the jokes. I did enjoy this film, and it makes me want to dig. I put in our Slack just before we started her short film called Swimmer, and it's on Vimeo to watch. Mm. And it's a black and white film, and it's 14 minutes long, and it's incredibly beautiful. So I think I want to dig into more of her work. I haven't seen the Joaquin movie.
It's heavy. But
yeah, I think most of her stuff probably is. I think she has that kind of storytelling about her. And so I think this is going to sit solid at a 4-star for a while for me. I don't know if I'll revisit it. I will to, you know, finish up the art for the episode. But yeah, 4 stars.
Okay. There you have it. Rat Catcher. Highly recommend grabbing the DVD until it's widely available. I don't know what the correct way to say that is. But we have a few voicemail letters to get to. 267-409-6983. 70mmpod@gmail.com if you want to send an audio file, voice memo, what have you, or send us a DM on IG. So we actually did get a letter from Mel, who picked that movie. So let's get into it. Hi, friends. I was going to leave a voicemail, but it's too hot out to talk on the telephone, so I'm writing you a letter. Love letters, whatever you want to do. I'm so excited that Proto chose Ratcatcher. I've been trying to predict what you guys will think, but I have no idea. Either way, I'm happy that people are watching it because Lynn Ramsey and this movie are both treasures that deserve more attention. Mm-hmm. I could say a lot about Ratcatcher, but mostly this movie means so much to me because of how accurately it portrays childhood. It's so brutal and also hilariously funny and beautiful. That moment when he first sees the field from inside the house is incredible. I don't think my heart has ever felt that way from watching a movie. I'm constantly chasing that feeling in my work, I think. Which I'll have a link to in the show notes. You can track down Mel's IG and Patreon. In other news, a few weeks ago, I saw Danny's review of Bullet on Letterboxd, and I'd always wanted to see a Steve McQueen movie, so Chuck and I watched it. Oh my God. Since then, yes. I think we've watched 5 more McQueen movies. I am obsessed with him. I could watch him eat food for hours. Is that weird? So thanks for that, Danny. But you're also, welcome. Danny, I gasped out loud during the last episode when you said all sports movies are garbage. Excuse me? Okay, bye. I can't wait to listen to this episode. And that's from Melissa.
Listen. Mel. I don't hate all sports movies. There's like a period of movies where I felt like everyone was the same.
There's no way you can tell me you don't like Remember the Titans. There's no way.
Well.
There's no way.
Well. I would never want to watch it again. Let's just say that. There's just, I don't care about it. It's just a genre that is kind of boring to me now. I love my League of Their Own. I love Sandlot. I love Little Giants, but that's all nostalgia for me.
Nostalgia.
I don't care about
Proto just cringed anything. Hearing that word. He's
fetal position when I say nostalgia. But
just making notes.
Thank you. Thank you for the letter, Mel. I haven't
Mel, give me your sports movie to watch.
Oh,
what's Mel gonna pick?
It's gonna be a League of Their Own.
God damn!
Remember when Danny almost picked that for 70mm, and then he threw
everyone said he was gonna pick it, and then he changed his mind.
You know what?
I have not watched a lot of Steve McQueen movies except for The Blob this recent year. That was it. Mm.
Steve's sweater game is always on point.
I don't know who his stylist is, but they're on point. Next voicemail.
Hey, 70mm. It is Mr. Michael. So I watched Ratcatcher last night. I wanted to kind of sleep on it for a night. That was something. I thought it did a great job of immersing us in like mid-70s Glasgow during the garbage strike and just the despair that all these kids were living in. You know, obviously following the one kid's journey from his friend's death that he was a part of to the end where I assume he committed suicide by jumping into the water, that horrific, disgusting water. But I think it did what its purpose was, which was to bring you into the world and unsettle you and have you feel some of the despair that's in these kids' lives or in all these folks' lives, actually. I was a little disconcerted by the bathtub scene. I get what the point of it was. I just don't know if we need to do that. I mean, did we watch child porn? I don't know.
The age-old question.
That is my quibble with the movie only. That's my only quibble. So, all right. So I have, gentlemen, keep up the great work.
Ren Mike D from the Will Run 4 podcast. Thank you for the voicemail.
It was hard. It is a little much. It's a little unsettling to see that. Because Yeah.
Let it out.
I don't know what to say about it. It just, you know, people will view it the wrong way. And I'm not saying Mike's viewing it the wrong way. But also, it's a very innocent scene. So I think it can go either way with it. It caught me off guard.
Well, yeah, I think the one saving grace is that they don't make anything sexual about their relationship. Mm-hmm. It really feels to me like it's a mirror to his relationship with his sisters, mm-hmm. where, you know, he probably took baths with his sisters when he was younger. But now that he's a little older, he doesn't. And this was almost like his, you know, he could connect with this girl, and they were able to be like vulnerable with each other in the way that he can't be with anyone else. And it was almost mm-hmm. like he was getting back to a place, where he was maybe with his family before. And you know, he can't do that anymore. So that's kind of how I saw like that whole scene, and then him even going to, you know, he leaves his house and he goes to her house and he spends the night with her. You know, really more, it just seems like for comfort and to be with somebody who doesn't know him in the way that mm-hmm. his family knows him or treats him.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
We also asked a question on IG today, what people were watching. So I do want to read some of them. After Hours from DG1138. Andy, our dear friend of the show, Andy asked if Hamilton counted as a movie. So that's one Hamilton comment.
If it's on Letterboxd.
Grugrux Dave said Hamilton twice and Eurovision. Very exciting, says doing a Marvel movie rewatch. I'm on Avengers, which I worked on. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I love Avengers. It's my favorite Avengers.
Remember how bad that second movie was? Just trash.
They're all the same.
Trash. I think this is Hayden's IG. First Reformed Prayer Hands.
Wow.
First Reformed. Mm-hmm. Loan. That might have been another proto review that made me ill. What was your rating on First Reformed?
3 stars.
Yeah,
baby.
I knew it. I knew it was a 3-3 banger. Malik says The Martian.
Do people not like that movie? Matt, I feel like that seems. I thought I liked it when I saw it the first time.
There's any negativity around that movie. It might come from me. I might have made a few troll comments about The Martian.
Okay, that's you. That's definitely you.
There's not enough love in that movie. That's my problem with it. I liked it though. It's fine.
The book's that way too. I didn't like I read the book is enjoyable, but it's a very strange book in that the guy like literally has no sense of characters. There's like no characters in the book. It's just this guy on Mars solving problem after problem after problem. And it's very enjoyable, but it doesn't read like a story. It's a very strange book.
It's no Dune.
It's no Dune.
Moadib. Christian Wallace watched Network 1976. I'd love for us to get that on the docket.
I've never seen that.
Neil says Rear Window. Dylan says La Haine. Cut me deep, homie. I actually added that to the watch list after I saw that comic because I never heard of it. And then Jose DM'd us and said that's one of his favorite movies. So got some work to do. Chuck Forsman from Bat and Spider says Pray for Death. Recent watch. And then Papa Jim says, quote, no, didn't watch any good movies. So thanks for that DM, Jim. Really appreciate the support. Next week is the big one. Mm-hmm. Proto is not getting to bed before midnight next week when we record that episode. Deep Impact and Armageddon. I don't know what movie is going to be named first in the podcast episode title. That's probably going to set people off if I put Deep Impact first. I don't know. But we're going to be talking about both movies. Everyone probably has the DVD at home. So get ready. Get watching. Get your thoughts ready and lined up. And allegedly there's going to be a Hamilton poll. And if we...
There will be.
If we hit 90% or above, you heard it earlier. I don't have to repeat myself. I'm not going to say it again. 90% or above. We'll see.
I'm not throwing away my shot.
Actually, maybe to tease it out a little bit, we added a movie for after Armageddon Deep Impact to the Letterboxd list.
Uh-oh.
Pan's Labyrinth. We had a special guest lined up for that one.
We have a special guest.
Cartoonist, friend of the show, always texts me comments about the show. He's excited to come on.
All around good guy.
That's all we'll say for now. Maybe we'll announce it next week. Pardo, any closing thoughts?
Man, I'm excited for next week. I might, you know what? I might have to hit the streets. I might have to get some, I might have to just go out into the wild and see what people are saying about Armageddon and Deep Impact. Get some viewers, you know, non-viewers, just people out there living their lives, mowing their grass. I don't know, going to pick up a pizza maybe. You know, have their kid in a stroller, pushing them down the sidewalk. I might have to pull some NPR type situation here where I got my boom mic out on the streets with my mask on interviewing folks. Am I doing this?
Is this
American life?
This Proto-X's life.
Stay with us.
6 feet away, Proto. You're going to have to get a long boom mic, shotgun mic for that thing. We're gonna get a text from Jenna. Can you bail my husband out since you gave him this cockamamie idea?
We could just get Jenna to fill in, though.
Jenna, are you listening?
God.
Thanks, everyone, for watching. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time. .78mm is a VHS Village production and produced by Dale_A. Sponsored by Half Double Design. Original artwork provided by Danny Haas. Spiritual guidance provided by Protolexis. This episode was mixed and edited by me, Slim. Special thanks to the good people at Letterboxd, and for a chance to win a pro Letterboxd account, share the show and tag us on social media at 70mmpod. Goodbye.